much steadier, isn't it, with all the four legs and everything?
Yeah, it is.
Appreciate that.
Did a great job. You ought to sing more solos.
Yes, sir.
Come on out, ooh.
I'm going to show honor.
It made me feel bad. I know. Trying to be nicer to me. That's not hard. Well, I hope you guys are feeling extremely studious today. Because we're going to have little groups. And the way we're going to do it, Josh,
yes, sir.
If can you see that from there?
Background, how does David describe
Doeg,
1-4?
Okay.
Got it.
Well, that's nice to be young. Okay, so if 35 and under can, all right, some of you, I know you're not 35, so. But 35 and under, if you go over where Josh is.
Yes,
so, Michelle, you can stay with him. It's okay. Make her feel good today. Okay, how are we going to do this? A little bit more even. Could you guys come and sit over here, just you two, and then we'll let that be a group. And Don and Kay, if you could come over here. Yeah. And Greg, you'll be in charge of this group. And Don, you'll be in charge of this group. So if you two would just come over here. Let's see. Maybe, Jared, could you, Jackie, come over here too? We'll kind of even it out. There you go. That's good. All of you are under 35, right?
No.
Okay. She isn't going to forgive me, is she? Just as long as somebody can see this, it would probably be okay. Now, Josh, your job, and Don, there you are. Let me take off my glasses. Your job, and Greg, your job, is to keep everybody on target.
Did you want to ask me if I could read that
sign? You got Hina.
Okay.
Somebody younger. But if you'll just keep everybody on target, you know, this is what we're supposed to be answering. Don't let people go off rabbit trails. Right. So that's your job. So same thing with you, Don. You're going to have to be kind of authoritative.
Bossy.
Yeah. Maybe, Kay, you could help. Under the authority of Don, you could help. Okay, so we're going to be looking at Psalm chapter 52, and we're going to be dealing with specific questions, and hopefully, you know, you guys all deal with it. I don't know how you're going to huddle, but maybe you can kind of huddle sideways and stuff like that. Just, if it works for you, it's fine with me. But hopefully, part of this exercise is to just encourage you when you're going through Psalm to think through, you know, what these are about. Obviously, we don't want to make this too mechanical or just an academic exercise. But there are some things that you need to sit and begin to contemplate as you're going through a psalm so that you'll rightly divide the word of truth. Otherwise, you know, we come in with our preconceived notions and it's easy to interject them and coming out with all kinds of ideas and thoughts that really aren't the purpose of the psalm. So we're going to be kind of going through and touching upon 1 through 4, 5 through 7, verses 8 and 9, and we'll break it down that way. And I'll have a question for each of the things. Now, the reason I haven't put up a question for verse 5 and 7 and 8 and 9 is I don't want you doing that yet. So, guys, the ones that are leaders, when you see me start writing down the next question, you got to kind of end the first question and go to the next one. So that would be kind of our way of all being on the same page and then ultimately coming to the end of it so that we might, you know, understand what this is about. So we'll actually start with that first question when we start breaking it up in our groups. The very beginning part is background, and I'll fill you in on that. The background of this, as you look at the beginning or the top of your psalm, it actually tells us, once again, what setting this is in. And it is in the setting of the Edomite Doeg, in which he had squealed on David. David is running from Saul at this particular juncture when this psalm is written. And in the writing of this psalm, as David goes and literally hides himself in the region of the Philistines, he finds himself feigning like he was a mad person. Then he ends up in a cave, the cave of Adullam, and he's hiding there. Doeg knows that he had been in a particular area and had actually been and had gone to where the priests were. And he was happened to be there at the time that David was there. And so he goes back and tells Saul. Saul's having a pity party in chapter 22, and he's saying, you know, nobody really cares for me. I mean, my own son is against me. Who is there that would stand up for me, Saul? And Doeg stands up and he says, you know, I know where David is, and I know where he had been. And so he begins to tell on him. Of course, Saul goes where he was and goes to the priests, slaughters all the priests, as well as then he goes into the village and man, woman, child, slays them all. So because of his chasing after David, I mean, really, to some extent, it's almost David's fault that all these people are dead in that kind of sense. But it's this Edomite that did it. And at first Saul goes, you know, he tells his men, he goes, you got to slay the priests because they helped David out. You know, they'd given him some bread and he'd gotten Goliath's sword. And his men go, we're not going to kill priests. And Doeg says, I will. So he slays them. This psalm is written, if you look at the top of your psalm, this psalm is written in which David begins to talk about his upset and his hostility towards this Edomite that has really deceived and betrayed and, you know, worked in stealth and had undermined David. And so he starts off the psalm this way. So what you're going to ask yourself as you look in Psalm 52 is you're going to ask yourself, how does David describe Doeg? That's the Edomite. That's the guy that did the squealing. That's the guy that set him up. Now, here's the point. The setting is such that it's letting us know that there are strong emotions involved. The Psalms are about emotions. Something happens to you, and because it's close to your heart, you're feeling very intensely about it. Somebody else might share that which happened to you, and they might kind of pass it on like a, you know, email thing. And people go, you know, I don't understand why they're so upset. But they can't really feel the emotions. So the reason why oftentimes in the psalm you have this background that they actually put at the top of the page is so that you can begin to feel, okay, it's a pretty intense deal. A lot of people died. And it's wanting you to know that the reason why you're seeing the intensity of the things that are being said is that, you know, this guy is really a rascal. And you can't just pass it up as oh, well, things happen. It's a pretty horrific thing. I mean, you can imagine over perhaps an 80, was it about 85, was it about 85 priests died? And then on top of that, every man, woman, and child in the village died. So that's pretty intense. So David, the psalm is written in response to that. And the first four verses is really talking about Doeg and how David feels about him. So the way that it begins, if you look with me in Psalm 52, as he starts off, "Why do you boast in evil, O mighty man?" Who is he talking about? Well, it tells you who he's talking about at the opening of the psalm, at the top of the psalm. He uses the pronoun you to describe him, you guy that does this. But he's going to describe him. So what I'm asking you to do is each group, just start listing how David describes this guy. There are certain phrases that he uses, certain words that he uses to describe him. So just take out some time to do this. And then you guys that are in charge, if you'll watch, before long I'll put the second question in to verses 5-7 and we'll talk about that. So just start listing. 1-4. Tell Don what you guys think. Thank you. Okay, 5 through 7 is going to be dealing with two questions. The first part is, what does he believe God is going to do? The second part is, how does he see the righteous responding? This is David's psalm, so yeah, how does he perceive, what does he believe God's going to do? How does he see the righteous responding? Verse 5 starts off, but God will. Verse 6, the righteous will. Now remember, you can't come to too much conclusions until you come to the end. I'm just saying. Right now, we're just asking with simplicity, what does it say? That's all we're asking. What is being said here?
I don't know if they left. Also, it sounds like that
Okay, in the last part, as you're looking at verses 8 and 9, is you're going to be asking yourself, what does David resolve to do? He actually starts off verse 8, but as for me, right, so he's making a resolve. He's going to do something. And actually, all the way through, he's going to make statements about what he's resolved to do.
Strong in the Lord. stuff training. Probably right.
Okay, now what I'm going to do is give you more information. So we're going to make this more three-dimensional. And then the information I give you, then in light of that information, what I want you to do is say, how does this new information change the way I see the text? Okay? So I'm going to add the more information. If I were to quote from the passage, and I'm going to do that, from 1 Samuel 22, the passage begins to read that, you know, of course, Doeg had squealed and said, you know, David had gone to the priest, Ahimelech, and so he pointed him in the right direction. Saul went there, of course, said, who would kill him? Doeg says, I'll do it. So he slays all these people. It reads this way in verse 18 of chapter 22. Then the king said to Doeg, turn around and attack the priests. And Doeg the Edomite turned around and attacked the priests, and he killed that day 85 men who wore linen ephod. And he struck Nob, the city of the priest, with the edge of the sword, both men, women, children, infants, also donkeys, oxen, sheep. He struck with the edge of the sword. Now, the context of this was that David had been hiding, and he ran to this place where the priests were, feeling like that would be a safe haven. I'm going to back up and read you some of that. So David comes to Nob and first introduces himself to the priest Ahimelech, and it reads this way as he comes. It says, David came to Nob, to Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech came trembling to meet David, and he said to him, why are you alone? No one with you. David said to Ahimelech the priest, the king has commissioned me with a matter, and he has said to me, don't let anybody know anything about the matter which I'm sending you and with which I have commissioned you, and I have directed the young men to a certain place. Now therefore, what do you have on hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread, whatever can be found. The priest answered David and said, well, there's no ordinary bread, but there is consecrated bread, if only the young men have kept themselves from women. And David answered and said, of course, you know, surely women have been kept from us. I mean, we're vessels of God, and young men were holy, though it was some ordinary journey. How could you say that? How much more than today would their vessels be holy? So the priest gave him the consecrated bread. Then ultimately David turns to him and he says, you wouldn't happen to have an extra sword on hand. And he says, well, I have Goliath's sword. He says, that's a good one. So he takes that and he leaves. That's more information. It's telling you something about David. So how does that new information change the way that you see this psalm? But just take a moment. I mean, it may not change it at all. Maybe you still see it the same way. Maybe it all comes together. But pull in the whole psalm. So the first part, the second part, the last part. How does it change the way that you see the psalm? And then when you get finished with that, I'm going to add more information.
Thank you.
26 years. Okay, so I'm just going to interrupt you just briefly and just add a little bit more information. In chapter 22, one of the sons of Ahimelech had escaped. One of his sons had escaped. And runs to David and tells David what had happened. David says to Abiathar, who is the son, he says, "I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul. I have brought death upon every person in your father's household." Now, let me add one more thing. It's not a mistake where the Psalms are placed. So the Psalm that was before this particular Psalm is what? 51, which is about David's gross immorality and his sin and his deceitfulness in putting a guy in front and slaying him. Now, David does that when he's 51 years old, Psalm 51. This psalm is when he's 25. But God purposely placed 51 in front of chapter 52. So how does that change the dynamics of the psalm? So just add that in. Yes, sir.
King Saul sent him to go kill the one priest, and he went and killed them all.
Well, the way it's basically put, go kill the priest, and of course he took some liberties, but Saul was more than happy to have everybody killed too.
Yeah,
Saul was at this juncture all about Saul. he was taking liberties because if you kill one person, maybe you get more bonus points if you kill a lot of people. Everything. So how does this change? Does it change the dynamics of this Psalms? That's my question. Okay, I'm going to throw in another question. How does David contrast Doeg with God in verse 1? How are they contrasted? Because you have a contrast in verse 1, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Loving kindness versus evil.
Okay. Okay, so he defines God. Okay. And he defines Doeg as. Okay. So there's a clear contrast. What is the psalm about? So that's the question you have to ask yourself, because at this point you've gathered truths. We've given it a three-dimensional. We've helped you understand the setting and some of the background. You're aware of where David's coming from. You're aware of where Doeg's coming from. What's the purpose of the psalm? So just take some time and talk amongst yourselves. Okay, I'm going to give you more information. The psalm starts off, the loving kindness of God endures all day long. He says in verse 5, God will break you down forever. As you go on, obviously, in verse 8, I trust in the loving kindness of God forever and ever. And I will give thee thanks forever, and then it'll end, and I will wait on thy name, for it is good in the presence of thy godly ones. If you look in verse 1, loving kindness is mentioned. If you look in verse 8, loving kindness is mentioned. That's the Hebrew word chesed, which sometimes is translated mercy, sometimes compassion. But it clearly has the emphasis of loving kindness. In fact, the focus really is on merciful acts of kindness and love. So we see it twice, but you actually see it three times, and you wouldn't know if I didn't tell you. That's why I'm giving you information. So you come to the end, and he says, I will wait on the name, for it is good in the presence of thy godly ones. He doesn't put the normal word in there for godly ones. He puts chesed. The reason why I point this out to you is he is defining this people that he's going to share with as people that are full of loving kindness. Now, what's interesting is there seems to be a contrast with that and verse 6, where he doesn't use the word chesed, he uses the word tzedek, or righteous ones, which is where we actually get the word Sadducee. Righteous is not a bad word. Of course, the Sadducees turned it into one. But the focus of righteousness seems more to do with right and wrong, where the focus of loving kindness seems to be from a different perspective. So just add that in helping you ascertain what is this psalm about. Let's just try to throw that in. If you feel like you got it, you know, say we got it, you know, say bingo or something like that. I'll give you more information. I'll give you a little bit more information. In verse 9, the way that it closes is, I will give thee thanks forever because thou hast done it. I will wait on thy name, for it is good in the presence of thy godly ones. Now, I need you to look specifically at the word wait, because that's a very unique word. It's not the normal word for wait. It has a connotation of, it's kind of a picture of twisting a bunch of things together and making them really tight. The point is not just merely one person waiting, but getting a lot of people waiting, and it somehow tightens the bond. So it's a pretty interesting word in that regard. And it's one of the reasons why then he says godly ones, because there's a unifying effect in so doing. So just to kind of interject that in as well is obviously a part. Then I have to ask one more question in your pursuit to figure this out. And that is just, it's a very simple one. So won't be a problem for you. The simple question is, in verse 9, he says, I will give thanks to thee forever because thou hast done it. What has he done? Why be vague? Why not just tell us? Okay, so it's all part of you. You need to talk amongst yourself, because the answer's not up here. I'm not going to say anything. What has he done? What is this about? What is this about? It's all about what he's done. And what is his name? You know, the thanks forever because thou hast done it, and I wait on thy name. On what name? Okay. I don't want to overload you on that, but. If we got time, I'll ask you what green olive tree has to do with it. You know, olive tree is specifically mentioned with those that are, what, prophets. And you see the two, like, olive branches are olive trees in Revelation, as well as Zechariah. Two. Anyway, I'll go to that. But it is interesting that he says, in the house of God. So you don't want to leave that out either. Just saying. There's a purpose there. God's done something. What has he done? Well, what's the victory? I give you more information. When he says, I am like the green olive tree, he's making reference to happiness. I'm extremely happy and feel very secure. The olive tree was a source of great blessing, and one of the reasons why it was used for prophets, because it's a source of blessing in many ways, not only for food, but for anointing, of course, obviously for fuel. It's a source of great blessing, but even beyond that, it was a source of great beauty. The olive tree in that particular region was very beautiful, and so it was said that it had the connotation of making you smile. So his point is, I'm very happy. Now, that's quite a transition from the beginning of the song. And so there's a happiness that seems to come in, and why does he interject that? So, yes, sir.
Is the fact that the oil is a soothing and healing element a part of that?
Yeah, it's all part of the joy and excitement. And I couldn't feel better. And how could he come to that point in this song?
And the rest and security is in the fact that he is in the house of the Lord.
Well, I think what's interesting, and just to give you more information, I think what's interesting is there is no house of the Lord. Nothing's been built. This is way before anything was built. And this is why you have a place where the priests are, but there's really not a house. At best, there is a tent. So he's got to be talking about something else there. He's not talking about a physical place, but he's talking about something else. And it's making him happy. He's there. He feels like he's there. So. You guys are going to have to come up with it pretty quick. I'm not trying to rush the Spirit of God, but.
Yeah.
I'll take that as a bingo. Is there anything in the text that makes you feel like he was forgiven of anything?
His position behind, I mean, his transformation, as he, after all this, he feels like, you know, the green olive tree is fresh, he's you know, whole and joyful, you'd have to envy that.
But does he use the word forgiveness?
No.
Okay, so we can't really go there. I'm not saying he wasn't forgiven. I'm just saying that's not the focus of the passage. Mm-hmm. Done what? Does it say forgiveness? All right, then you can't. Where does it say he forgave somebody? You got to stick with the text.
is it in David's own transformation? It doesn't say transformation, but you see transformation.
Is it just a love? No.
Give me something from the passage. Okay. There's clearly a contrast, and the contrast is pointing us in the direction of what this is about. Right. Right. So what is it that, what's the purpose? What's the purpose of the song?
What is the purpose?
Why was the song written? Why do I need to know this information? The loving kindness of the Lord, and clearly that is the name that we beckon. He's focusing on the loving and kindness of the Lord. That's the name that we wait for. Right? Something happens horrific, terrible in your life. How do you feel? Terrible. Horrible. Yeah. What would you like God to do to the bad people or the bad things that...
Get them.
Yeah.
He's hoping that God will take care of...
Yeah, take them out.
That's what he wants.
Take them out.
And David's no angel, and so that's why he asked for forgiveness, because he didn't think that's what he was doing, right?
Well, he's not asking for forgiveness in the text.
No, I understand that. We have to get to go back to
Psalm 51. Actually, you'll have to go... Forward in time 26 years. So he's not even there yet. He's 25 years old. He's, you know, later on he's 51 and he really blows it. But at this point he's feeling pretty emboldened because he's 25 years old. I mean, you haven't lived long enough to do anything terrible. But the point is he can see very clearly just how terrible this guy is. And he's angry about it, naturally so. He wants God to do something about it. And if you have any righteousness about you at all, you'll laugh at them when they get it. Right? If you have any righteousness at all, if you care about right at all, you're going to go, you deserve that. Boy, am I glad you got yours. But that's not where he ends up. Okay, you're calling it transformation. But what's the point of the song?
He goes from Proverbs 24:17 is what we can.
What was it?
Proverbs 24:17.
Which is?
Don't rejoice when your enemy falls.
Okay. So the point of the psalm is don't rejoice when your enemy falls.
Well, getting over that emotion. past that emotion.
How does it get past the emotion?
Trusting
God's going to get him.
God's going to show loving kindness to David because he looks at what this man did. He realized, he knows that he
came
about.
But it's his fault that they're all dead, too.
Right.
He's trusting the loving kindness of God at this time, forever and ever, I'll give you thanks. You're going to take care of this, and it's your character, your name. I'll wait on you. But he's guilty, too.
Does anger, hostility, people getting it, ever you really unite people? What unites us?
When we suffer together. Or when we
wait on his loving kindness. Right. The one thing that a 25-year-old isn't really good at doing.
Waiting.
He's a fighter.
Right. He just wants to get it. But he's coming to the point that really happiness can only come when he believes God is going to bring good. He doesn't even know that good is slaying those people. He knows that the right thing to do is to wipe them all out. That's the right thing to do. He knows that. But he's not going to find happiness there. And it's not going to unite the body there. What is going to unite the body is saying, I know that God will do right in his time. And he is working right. And it begins to unite your hearts together in that hope and that trust. That I mean, who would have thought that Jesus would die for sinners? Who would think that?
Was it Abiathar, the priest's son of Kishon, which right away, that united him and Abiathar.
Yeah.
And I think it was right after that that all of those people started coming to him. If I remember correctly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and who would think that at the worst point of your life, I mean, there's obviously tremendous guilt upon his shoulders, right? How can you find release from guilt? The perception is, you know, I got to torture myself. And God says, no, think on my loving kindness and my ability to make this right.
Don't fight back.
Yeah, you have to, there is a point in your life where you've made such a mess that it's impossible for you to untwist it. But God can, you have to come and believe that God's loving kindness can somehow make everything right. And you need to be willing to wait for that. And once you resolve to do that, then there is this sense of joy and happiness that you've done. You're going to say something.
One of the questions you asked, what did he do? It says, you have done it. So, you know, the whole, it's all about faith. Because trust, you know, waiting on, he hasn't yet experienced it. But it's like I think of in the book of James, when we're rejoicing in the trials, where he's done it. We know it. We have this confidence here, even though everything falling apart because of our own doing.
Well, and the important, and the reason why it's vague, he has done it, is because we don't know what it needs to be. But we're trusting God to do it, which we know he does all things well. And once again, who would have thought that the answer to this is Christ dying for the sinners, for the Edomite as well as, well, 26 years later, David.
Right.
You know, it's just, who would have imagined? It's easy to get overwhelmed and with your anger about somebody that's done something wrong to you, and they deserve it. But when you do something wrong, oh man, the one thing that you want is the loving kindness and the grace and the mercy of God. So it's a very interesting psalm because it takes us through the process, and the psalm is helping us see the emotions that we go through, but taking us to that point in which, well, actually the only place that you can find happiness, and that is putting your trust in his loving kindness and waiting on him to take care of those issues. We're trying to work out all of the things, and quite frankly, we even know what God needs to do. But it'd be better to let him do it, whatever it is. So it's very, yes.
Why did David take the sword then?
And the bread.
If he was so trusting.
No, that was
my timing is a little botched up, perhaps, but he grabbed that sword.
That
he's got
yeah.
a lot of trust, but he still wants that trust but verify.
Right, right. Well, it is actually believed that he writes the psalm after all of this happens. So it's after the fact. But it was during that time that he was very fearful. Of course, he feigned, you know, like a madman. And so the wonderful thing about David is he really messes up large. But he keeps coming back, and you say, I mean, I don't think there's anybody in the room that has messed up this bad to where hundreds of maybe thousands of people died because you were lying. You lied. You went into that priest. You shouldn't have even gone there because you knew. And you could see the Edomite. He was watching you. I know he's going to go tell Saul. You knew all this. What could free somebody from all of that guilt to where he's like a tree, an olive tree in God's house, which means God's house, he's accepted by God and he's a part of the family. What could cause that? And it just really shows the power of going to God and putting your trust in him. There's a great power in trusting in his loving kindness. And there have been many a time where I've so blown it that I just simply came to God and I go, I know I don't deserve this, but I'm trusting in your loving kindness. And he takes my depression and my sorrow and he says, you win. Because I'm never not going to be full of loving kindness. And wow. Father, give you thanks for this passage and just this time together that we have to talk about these things. Lord, help us to open up your word and just see the wonderful truths that you have for us. Let them be a part of our lives and unite our hearts together as we do that. Join all of us through loving kindness. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. I have more information.
You know, when he sat out there, he didn't know what the end was going to be. He didn't know what the consequences or anything.